Okay, Rabbi, we had mentioned in the past that although Rav Dessler was the founder of the Gates at Koilov, nevertheless, he always wanted to remain sort of like behind the scenes, not considering himself to be called a Rosh HaKoilov or to be in anybody who really is in the position of authority to influence, but rather have everybody's opinion should be an equal opinion. However, when there were situations that he felt that certain decisions had to be made, so, and there would be a meeting, because that's the way he wanted it. He did not want to come outright and say that this is my opinion and to impose it. But to have people feel, all the members of the Koil feel that they are equal members. So he had his way of doing it before the meeting would go from one member to another and discuss individually. And then when the issue was raised formally, the outcome was usually a foregone conclusion because he already had worked it out. And this is the way it was. And finally, when the conclusion was brought out, he would say, this is the Das HaKohol, he would say. Not that this was his opinion. But although it was clearly that this is what he tried to have arranged, that these results should happen. But the Maisa, this was his anhog all the time. Really to remain sort of like in the back and not to be like in the forefront, to push himself in the pin of authority. Of course, then everybody knew that he was the authority. As we said, he would always insist that he was merely just one member like anybody else of the Koil. There's nobody special. He's not special over anybody else. He's merely one member. He's a member like anybody else, and he had no more to say in the direction, he says, of the Koil than any other, he says, of the young people there. This is his always something that he would say. And interesting, he writes in Miftah Meliyahu himself, in his own Sefer, he writes that any institution that's led by someone that's seeking honor or prestige, Rav Dessler believed was doomed to failure. And in fact, this is the quote. He quotes and he says, he describes people in his Sefer that were great in Torah, extremely capable, and they were meticulously, he writes, observant of mitzvahs. He says, brilliant thinkers, who nevertheless never fully succeeded, he says, in imbuing their Talmidim, he says, with the spirit of the Ben Torah. And the reason, he writes, because they treated their yeshivas as a physician, he says, or a source of livelihood and prestige. So it was ulterior motives. This was his thing. And he says, this approach, he said, will never, he says, succeed in really changing people's lives. And he was true to those beliefs, the way that he believed it. This is the way, this is the fact that he behaved. As a matter of fact, he would always say, he considered each member of the Koil to be extreme Talmud Chacham, and he would say it is simply, he says, it is prohibited, it's forbidden. For a person to try to rule over Talmid HaChachamim. And this is a quote that he writes, my low level, he says, I know well. And how much worse, he says, is to rule over Talmid HaChachamim Gedoy L'Torah Yir Shemayim. This is how we refer to the other members of the Koilo. Again, you see, this was the Anivis. He wrote these words to a particular Dr. Hyman who lived in New York at a particular time. And it is interesting to point out that twice, it is said that about only twice, probably, that he insisted on his position in the face of opposition from some members of the Koil. Twice, with two issues that came up, where he insisted that he has to pull through, he has to push through this particular decision. One situation was, the first, when he wanted to expand the Koil. He wanted to expand the Koil, bring in more members, and many of the members were reluctant to do so, because they were afraid that the resources would not be enough, and you would not be able to find enough resources, because all the members of the Koil were paid. They were concerned if there would be more members, there would not be enough money. So Rav Dessler's response was something which is sort of out of character, because usually this is not the way he would speak. He said the following, he says. He said to the Talmidim, this is what he said to them. He said, you have a right, he said, to contract if you wish, but I can't work for an organization that has contracted itself. And Memela, so this is insisted to bring in more. The second situation was a few years later that he succeeded in obtaining what was considered to be for those days a very large contribution, £400. And what happened is that subsequently, because this was the Koil, but Gates had also had a yeshiva. So the yeshiva also sent out a solicitor to go to the same benefactor. The same benefactor who gave £400 to the Koil. So now they sent out a shliach to go to the same person for the gate of the yeshiva. And the person said, I already gave. So now there became friction between the yeshiva and the koilu. because they were afraid, the yeshiva, that the koil would draw away money from some of the sources where the yeshiva, right, was counting on. So they had a meeting. So the Vad of the koil voted not to return the gift that Rav Dessler received, because it was given personally to Rav Dessler. On the other hand, Rav Dessler refused, and he said that this was on principle. He did not want to accept any money that would link to any trace of machloikis. And he says that the yeshiva, he says that the machloikis with the yeshiva, rather, said would be more important, he says, to avoid that, and he returned the money. He returned the money, even though it was rightfully given to him, was handed over. At the end of the day, because being Rav Dessler, ultimately, he was the one always responsible anyway for raising money for the koil. So whatever he said, they acquiesced. He said, but the burden rested anyway on his shoulders to raise the funds. You have to realize, we just touched upon a little bit, you know, it really he had a superhuman schedule that he took upon himself. Because the accepting the position of the Geis of Koil we mentioned, he was always in frail health. He never really was a person who was fully strong and healthy. And he undertook a schedule during the war years. In the war years, that would have destroyed a much younger man who was really in robust health. And this was the thing. Because every week, just realize, it's not once in a while. Every week, Rav Dessler had three objectives. The objectives were, from the beginning, he made a condition, when we mentioned, remember, when he accepted the position of Geis of Koilo, he said the acceptance of the responsibility for the Koilo, was that he would continue teaching his private Talmidim there in the London area. It's quite a big trip, going from Geis to London. And therefore, and we should make a point, by the way, he raised all the money for the koil. He did not take anything. He refused to take any money from the koil. And the private talmidim that he had in London, that was really the only source of income. The only source of income. And so, in addition to the private teaching, this private teaching that he did not want to lose that, he wanted to keep that kesher, that connection with those talmidim. In addition to that, he gave public shurim to meet with groups of Talmidim others in London, also Manchester, every week. He also found time to give weekly shmuzim for the koilel, and also public shmuzim geset. At the same time, the early years also gave a chabura, which is a lumdish yeshir, on the masechta that they were learning. This is all every week. But besides that, every week he alone had the responsibility, which he took upon himself, to raise the entire week's budget for the koilel. So I had to do fundraising also every week, in addition to all of these various shurim. And it basically, it exceeded at that time, was a lot of money, was over £100 a week. And one of his things that he always made sure was that the money was always paid on time. The stipend that the Koilo members would receive would always be on time, and that the Koilo will never incur any debts. It's interesting enough, somehow he was always able to fulfill those conditions. Even though every week, in the beginning of the week, the coffers were empty. No one had a half of him, how's he going to fill at the end? But at the end of the week, he always had the money. That was the siyata d'shamayim, the fact that he had. So just to have an idea, to do all this in a week, he embarked on a schedule that left him. He was only in Geitzer. Remember, he was only in Geitzer from Friday morning, he says, to Matzoi Shabbos, to Shabbos night. Because immediately on Matzoi Shabbos, he says, first of all, two nights every week, and sometimes more, he stepped on the train. So he was always traveling, London, Manchester, all over the place. He slept on the train, and by the way, on that train, during those nights, he slept on the train with many members of the British Armed Forces on those trains. And in one letter, he describes himself as Hador, he says, someone who is dwelling on a train. Interesting thing is that he spent so much time on a train during Gateshead years that he even developed a method. He invented, actually. He developed a certain device to alert the engineer who runs the train to be able to alert. The engineer should be able to be alerted of upcoming signals before he could see them visually. That the engineer should be able to be alerted of upcoming signals, and it's a very interesting thing. There was somebody by the name of Volkhonin Karnovsky, and Rav Dessler said to him that he patented the device. Rav Dessler patented the device, but he said he didn't have any money, he said, to maintain the patent. and was eventually taken over by British Railways. He was Machadish. He was Machadish something. Machadish something. How to engineer should be able to perfect the ways to be able to know what's coming up, even foreseeing the things visually. And to tell you something interesting, the English, because I just saw, there's something called Machon technology, many, many years already. And the person who heads it is a very big kosher with Talmud Chacham, his name is Rabbi Yitzchak Halpern. He was the head of the Machon technology, and in Beis Vegan. He has the entire, he says, koil of people studying is technology in halacha. He himself is an expert in technology. He studies technology because before you're able to relate technology to halacha, you have to understand this regarding Shabbos, regarding all these things that you heard about, gromos, witches, all these things. He was really one of the first really who implemented that. One of his main specialties was elevators. When all the shadows of elevator comes up, we're talking about Shabbos elevators even, because there are issues, because the question was, when you go into an elevator on Shabbos, the question is that the weight of each additional person, right, encourages, and for more energy, right, energy to be accelerated, and so on and so forth. And there was shadows, is it a question, is it a shadow, is it not a shadow, all these various issues. So I met him about 20 years ago, I believe it was, maybe less. Especially when to come into his institution, so right away you have is you come into the hall where you have a small miniature elevator, literally, but with all the intricate details of an elevator, but about this size. You see all the chains with screws with everything there, and I once asked him. I said to him, "How did you become such an expert in elevators?" So he said, "I think he said that was the only time he came to America was to study special elevators. The only time he came to America, he says, was to study elevators." So I'm able to be able to apply it to Aloch, because it's Talmud Chacham, we're not Talmud Chacham, but you have to know the Metzius very well. Most cases, many poskim have no idea what's going on, so to be able to apply the Aloch. He really studied elevators. I said to him, I said, "Do you know English?" So he says, "No." So he says, "But the stuff is written in English mostly." So he said he had it translated. I said, "So why don't you learn English?" He said, "Very simply, because he has such a desire," he says, "for technology, he's afraid if he's going to know English, instead of learning, he's going to be busy with technology." So the doctor said, "Doesn't want to learn English," he said. He has such a desire, he has such an understanding of technology. Why am I mentioning all this? He says, "While he was in America studying elevators," he says, "I gave them idea how to build a better elevator." I don't know if he did it or not, but this is what he told me. It's interesting to hear you have Radessa giving the idea, you know, the train, the British Railways, how to really, you know, do something. I mean, I gave them some ideas. These people are running railways, you know, for who knows how many years. Here comes that Talmud Chacham, a tzaddik, you're going, and he has better ideas, you know, how to run their own system. And that's what he said. He gave them ideas. He says, "Why don't you do it this way? To make better elevators," and so on. He had a whole shita, by the way, that down is more shiloh than up, without going down into it. This thing with going down in an elevator. But there's different elevators, but they're made, not all made by the same way. But he had to, down, he said, is more halachic question than up, contrary to popular belief, because up the elevator has to use more energy. Down uses your own weight as well, going down. Anyway, this is what he mentioned. Just to mention this, so on Motzoi Shabbos, this would work. Motzoi Shabbos, he would take a midnight train from Geisa to London, right? And he had some food that the bakery, the local bakery at Gateshead prepared, like 3 cakes. That was for the whole week, food for the whole week. He had in a suitcase, he says. And Sunday morning he arrives and he spent time learning with a member of the Sassoon family. Sassoon family were a very closely known family. So he learns that they had a mansion in Letchworth. Had a mansion in Letchworth. We spent a half a day each week learning with someone called Solomon Sassoon, a very well-known person. And then sometimes in the middle of the week, we traveled by train from London to Manchester, returned to London by night train. Late Thursday night, it was back to Gateshead by overnight train to London. This was every week. Just want to mention that in the house of the Sassoon house, being that he was a frequent visitor every week, just want to mention that even the servants, you know, they knew him and would come to him with their complaints. So Maisa Shahoya, during World War II, the Sassoons took in 4 young women, refugees, took him into the house. And they had a goyish maid, a non-Jewish maid. Her name was Miss Thompson. She was a nanny. She was there even before Shlomo Sassoon was born. So she was very upset. The fact, he says, new Jewish refugees came into the house. They're invited to sit at the Shabbos table, and she's not allowed to do that. So she came to complain to Rav Dessler. So, Nekuda was, it seems that was obvious that she felt he was the only person who could intercede on her behalf. Lamaisa, a few years later, a baby was born there in the house, a new Sassoon called David Sassoon. At that time, this non-Jewish nanny becomes very seriously ill. Very seriously ill. And the doctors lost hope for her recovery. Rav Dessler gave her a bracha, a very interesting thing. He said, you're going to survive, you're going to live until after the chasana of this David. And Kachave, she recovered, didn't die, until 3 weeks after this David's chasana, as Rav Dessler promised her. So here, this is a little bit more about Rav Dessler's rigorous schedule and the power of his bracha as well. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, so we go here to page 33. Okay, it's Perik Beis in the bottom. If you see, B'masa U'matam. Let's take a look, page 33. Perik Beis, Masa U'matam. Very, very interesting. Rav Dessler really applied a lot of thought. This is, again, talking about giving and taking. It's something that we started already last week. We take a look. And he says as follows. He says, talking about giving and taking, and talking about how important it is to be a giver instead of a taker, Rav Dessler says the following. Hine yishalunu hasochrim balei hamasa v'hamatim. He says, we know, he said, that merchants, he says, that the merchants and businessmen are going to ask. Atem oimrim, he says, you always say, she'acha nesina hitoiva, v'al v'chol netila himida ro. You're always saying that giving is good, is the only thing that's good. And taking is bad. But if that's the case, haloi bozet tafriyu eseder kol olam, then you'll really disrupt the whole order of the world. Why? Because all creatures are made in the image of Hashem, he says, hein kol abruim. All creatures b'ruim Hashem, li es noisim noisim kakas. In other words, everybody was created by Hashem to both give and take. This is how Hashem arranged the world. So why should man be any different? All creatures are born to give and take. Why should man be any different? Why should he not take as well as give, as he says? V'loma, he says, lo yitul v'gam yitik. Why should he take as well as give? And here Rav Dessler goes on to point out here the different habits of people and the different nature of people. This is a really very interesting investigation in terms of human behavior. Avohem is Torah Darko, he says. Rav Dessler says the truth is clear. Gigam be'ela, he says, because the fact is there are two kinds of taking, even taking. Not all taking is the same. He says, Gigam be'ela shnei minin heima. Even regarding taking, what does it mean taking? When you define the word taking, what it means to take, there are two levels of taking, he says. He says, in the following. He says, Yesh ashe yitlu harbe va'achma'at yitnu. There are people who take the maximum and they give the minimum. That's one category of people. Again, Yesh ashe yitlu harbe va'achma'at yisnu. There are people, he says, who take the maximum and they give the minimum. Who are those? Haloheimo ha'seichrim. These are people. He says, basically, these are the merchants. Ajishtamshu b'chol mikra l'harvich boy. Their whole life, their whole purpose in life, as a matter of fact, is to take advantage of every opportunity for profit. Ajishtamshu b'chol mikra l'harvich boy. Their main purpose in life is, right, is to create as much profit as possible. As he points out, mebli his chashev, without taking consideration, im tircham vavoidosom, asher ovdu shovim heima be'emes dai harevach asher sihu b'tmurosom. People who are interested in profit do not consider, is it my effort really worth it? They don't care. They're so interested in making a profit that they don't even take consideration if all the effort and all the work that they're putting into it, is it really worth to put in all the effort and all the work for that little, relatively small amount of profit? In other words, the effort does not bear any relationship to the profit that was gained. But they're so out into making a profit, so that's what they live for. And he goes on further, not only that, you have people that are so into receiving profit, gaining, that v'gam yis'amtsu lehonois b'kishlon reyeyem. There are people who bend their efforts to benefit from their neighbor's failure. Some people stand to profit davki when other people fall. Chapters in life. People to take advantage. If somebody fell, I can make a profit from his failure. Hatsar Yidiyosim, or for somebody not knowing, oh, he's not aware, so I can take advantage of it, because he's not knowledgeable in this area. So I can make a profit, take advantage of the lack of the knowledge of that other person, and so on. So he says, is not this really a practice, he says, of deception? He said, Bibli Hefrish? How can you separate that? And he says, and certainly, go further, the Kolchkein Eila Ashes Choron the Kinyonim Yarbe. And then he says, not to speak of people who just amass their fortunes, he says, on siphoning off other people's hard working earnings. And also using usury, you know, severe interest, and so on. He says, V'omalacherim yoichelu. They survive by taking, right, other people's efforts and using it to their own advantage. V'neshechu b'marbis, right, for charging all type of high level of usury. Oyelu, what about people who make profits on the fact that they barely pay minimum wage only for their own profit, he says. You have people who exploit their workers, paying them merely a pittance, he says, for the hard work that they put. With chireim, the people that they hire. Lavoit avuram avoidas perech. What do they pay them? You hardly pay them anything, he says. He's saying, for the toil. And then you have on the national scale. People who want to conquer nations for their profit, for their gain. Behenam ishabdim ba'amin. Then you have, of course, people who are tyrants, who oppress whole nations. And they rule with a powerful hand. These kind of people that we just mentioned, these type of merchants, these type of people, these are people who take the maximum and give the minimum, as he says. So let's go further. That's one category. Okay, they have the category of people who are just into taking. They take the maximum and they give the minimum. But then he goes on further and he says, V'zois v'idacheres, but furthermore, he says, those people who take the maximum and give the minimum, even the minimum that they give is not giving, because they're giving him a manas to take further. So even the little that they give is also the chesn that I'm giving now to be able to take even more, as he goes on to show. He says, Gam hama'ata she'isnu. He says, even the little that they do give, he says, is not true giving, he says. Ein she'roshay b'toyv, it's not rooted in the good, on the good nature of wanting to give. B'koy chanasina. It's not that they give because they are givers. The little bit that they give is also not giving. Ach memekor ra'yabia. But even the giving, he says, comes really, he says, from an evil source. It means a bad source. It's from the root of taking. Their giving is also rooted in taking. Why? Because haloi kol she'ifosom umachshevoisom benetilei yidboku. Because these people, all the desires and thoughts are immersed in taking. So if they give, it's only with the object of taking, even says, sevenfold in return. So that which they give, the little bit they give also. And he gives a common example. By the way, it's not always a chesar in this case, but just an example. For example, a person goes into a grocery store, right, and walks out with 5 bags of groceries, was given to him by the storekeeper. Now, is the storekeeper called the giver? He gave him 5 bags. He gave him 5 bags of groceries, right, to make a profit from the money that he's taking. Yeah, he gave him groceries, but the giving is amanat to take. So the storekeeper was giving the groceries is not really a giver, because he's giving because he wants to take money, right? Sevenfold or how much more? Right? Then what is so you see people that even when they give, but the giving is linked because I want to take all that much more. So even the little that you give sometimes, it's also not for the sake of giving. As he goes on to say, that which they give while manash yitnu shivasayim negdoy, to be able to collect 7 times as much, right, in return. As he goes on to say, hachenvoni, take a storekeeper, he says. The storekeeper, the marshal, for example, knows in Sukharoso Laman Yaviah. Yeah, he gives schayr. Is he a giver? He's giving schayr to take. His whole giving is amanat to take. It's all predicated on taking. So he says, Ubinosna Lakoina Schayra Yafa Vitoiva. And when the storekeeper gives, let's say, good quality goods, what's his purpose? Is his purpose because he wants to give him good quality goods? That's not his purpose. His purpose is because he's able to earn money that way. He's able to be marviach, he says. So kavanosei hu leman yarviach ba'onim harbe. Some storekeepers say very magnanimously, I want to service the community. It sounds very nice. I want to service the community. But of course, we don't want to serve the community. But what's his main reason? Now, there are people, maybe, you know, who really have lofty ideals. You have such a situation as well. But he's talking generalized, just in general, you know, how people, the weaknesses of people and the human nature. But then he goes further. And then he says, V'yesh oid ro gedoyle b'keile. And then he says, there's even still greater, something that's even worse. Of all this that I mentioned, he said that even the people who give minimum, but even that giving that they give is also not giving. They're giving the minimum also in their mind just to be able to pay. But there's something that's even worse. And they said is, he says, Kikashi Yishafuala Natila. There are people that whose drive, the drive is so much towards taking that Yitzharu Zebazet, that the inevitable result is that it causes severe competition. Competition is good, but sometimes it's severe competition to the extreme. You're so much interested in taking that you don't care about taking somebody else's. To compete in a way so severely, we have a situation which every person is trying to get as much as he can for himself out of every situation. Every situation he's trying to turn it to himself. Now he says, in the eyes of society many times there's nothing wrong with that. On them, he says, "Ain oval b'zeh b'mishpat b'nei odom." It's true, he says, from the point of view of human judgment, many times it's not considered bad. But let's look at the results of this type of behavior. Aval ha'im ein ha'hischarus, hischarus in this competition, mevil de tzar v'yisurim harbe. But is it not true that sometimes severe competition can lead to much needless pain and suffering? Not only that, the gam l'pomim l'dei chaloyim roim can cause severe illness and sometimes even premature death to the other person. Someone just took away his livelihood by just competing so severely, not letting him live. He goes on to say, as he says, Misa Kedumas, which is an early Misa. So again, so of course, this is the downside of human nature. This is the downside of human nature. Elohim, he says, this is Darke Hamin Horishin. This is what we're talking about, are the results, he says, of one type of giving and taking, he says. Hamin Hasheni, the other kind is Ba'aru Drochov de Perakabo. The next one will be discussed, he says, now in this coming chapter. So let's take a look now. Perigimel, this is Hamasa Vahamata Natoy, the good example of giving and taking. We just discussed now the wrong way, the negative way of giving and taking. But people really are maximum takers and very little givers, and even the chelik that they give, when they give already, it's also with the intention of taking. But now what about giving and taking on the good side? Let's look at it this way. Aval Eile, he says, Hey Madarke Sadikim. Shibim Neyoda. But now, of course, you have Sadikim, he says, in the world as well. You have the ways of Sadikim, and that's very different. Sadikim are just the opposite. Nisinosom Rabo Unitilosom Muetes. Sadikim are the other way. The giving is maximum, and the taking is minimal. Just the opposite. Sadikim, their giving is maximum, and the taking is minimal. And here also. And even when they take, it's for the sake of giving. Just like in the opposite case. The opposite case, he said, that there are people who are such takers that even when they give, the giving is for the purpose of taking. Tzaddikim is the other way. Tzaddikim are maximum givers. And even when they take, they take because they want to give. We'll soon see. This is the other way. That even the little bit that they take, it's for giving. It's always for giving. He said, "Vagama'ata sheyikhu." He says that even the little bit that they take, which is essential, because it enables them to maintain. They take because the taking enables them to maintain the giving, right, to which they are devoted. Laman Epshalohem Etanasina Vahatobo. He says, Matas Nafshom, which that is their life's ambition, to always be able to give. So they have to take Pasha to be able to survive. They have to live, so they have to take also whatever they're taking. But the whole purpose of taking is to continue living, to be able to contribute more and more, and to give of yourself. So it goes on like this. So what comes out, what emerges is the following. Kigam nitilosom in mikor kodosh, he says, yuasa. What comes out that follows that their taking also comes from a holy source. Because the whole idea of taking is to be able to continue afterwards to give further. It's mechotes hanasina. Their taking is merely, he says, to be able, he says, to fulfill the desire to give. V'layigu b'ro, he says, their taking has nothing to do with the bad side of taking. Dikoy hanatila. Lo'oilomim, never. Hakdoishim ha'shabar ha'tema, they are the holy ones on this earth. He says, ha'vekim b'midas koinam. They identify with the attributes of Hashem. What's the attribute of Hashem? The attribute of Hashem is to give. That's Hashem. Hashem kirachum b'chanum. Tzadikim follow. Tzadikim follow the midas koinam. They follow the attributes of Hashem, and therefore they are givers. The little bit that they take is only with the intention to be able later on to continue to give further. So now, if you want to, now he says general merchants. General merchants are always out just to make a profit, and no matter what stands in the way, doesn't make a difference. They'll just step over as many toes as possible because they have one thing in mind. They have just the one thing in mind. How do tzaddikim, who are in business, how do they make a profit? Here he shows. He says, how are we to conceive, he says, talking about giving and taking, he says, in the positive way. So he says, let's observe two gedolei Yisrael, he says. Let's observe, says Rav Dessler, two gedolei Yisrael, let's learn from them. And these two gedolei Yisrael are from one end, he says, of Jewish history, and the other one is at the other end of Jewish history. Let us come and take a look, b'masi shnei gedolei olam. Let us come and take a look, and let's examine, he says, the actions, he says, of two of the greatest human beings. Two of the greatest human beings. Ho'echad, one of them, he says, min hayoyse kedumin. One of them, he says, lived in the earliest of time. Vasheni, the other one I'm going to point to, says Rav Dessler, is ma'achreine ho'achreinen. Is from the latest of time. Means almost in our time. Beninso, by observing, he says, the behavior of these two great people, one of the earliest of time, going back to the Chumash, as we'll see, and one in our time, the latest of time. Contemporary. Observe the nimsa saderach hayeshora. Then you're going to find out, he says, the proper way. One thing is sure: if you follow their path, you'll never fail. Follow the path of these gedolim, and you never fail. Okay. So who's the first one? Who's the first one to observe? The Torah says, we find that the Torah tells us very clearly in Bereishis, by Yishalech Hanoich Yesolakim, right? The Torah tells us. Regarding Chanoich, Chanoich, let's remember, was the seventh generation of Adam HaRishon. Chanoich was the seventh generation of Adam HaRishon. And the Torah talks about that he was a great tzaddik. The Torah says this. Hashem himself says that Chanoich is a tzaddik. Not people are saying it, Hashem is saying it. Vayishale Chanoich es Elokim, Chanoich walked with Hashem. Example. The Chumash doesn't say an example. So that's why we always have Chazal. Tell us behind the scenes. What was his profession? Chazal say Chanoich was a shoemaker. He was a cobbler. He fixed shoes. How did Chanoich, right, behave when he fixed shoes? So it says the following. V'amru Chazal, so Chazal say, Ki Chanoich toifer manolim hoye. Yes? Chanoich's profession was to stitch up shoes, torn shoes, repair shoes. But Alko Tfir was such a tzaddik, that on every stitch, you know, that he made the shoe, now that's a very mundane type of work, you know. But on every stitch, Chanoich, hoye meyachid yechudim lekoinoi. Now, on a Kabbalistic level, you know what it means, meyachid yechudim? Meyachid lekoinoi means that no matter what he did, his mind was connected to Hashem. That's the general interpretation. That's the general interpretation. Meyachid yechudim means is, we're thinking of all the shamus of unification of the different variations of Hashem's name. His mind was in heaven. He's fixing shoes. So what it seems to say is quite simply, right? Externally, he's Isaac in Gashmias, right? But his mind was focused to Hashem. Not true, said Rav Sol Salanter. That's not what was on Chanoich. Because if somebody gives you, this is the world of Musa, you can see. If somebody gives you a pair of shoes to repair, your mind better be on the shoes, he says. Not to the Rabbi Shalom, he says. You have been hired to do a good job. So what does it mean? He was Miyached Yehudim. What does it mean he was a Miyachad Yehudim? What does it mean that he sort of, he achieved some mystical union? What was this mystical union, right? So let's take a look. B'shamati, he says Rav Dessler, B'shem Rabbeinu Yisroel Masalant Zatzal. He said, I heard, he said, B'shem Rabbi Yisroel Salant, Shebir HaMaimer HaZeh, Bir Nechmot. He said something very interesting. He said something very interesting, a beautiful explanation, he says. And by the way, and that's typical, says Rav Dessler, of the approach that we're talking about, of how a Yid does business. How a Yid does business. So V'yoymah, Rav Dessler clearly said, don't interpret the Chazal on a Kabbalistic level, which merely means, right, on every stage with Miyachid Yehudim, right, and every kid, his mind was connected to some mystical, with some mystical thought. Right? That's the way Hasidim teach it. That's the way, that's what Miyachid Yehudim always means. But the Shah Salam, they're coming from the world of Musa, says, no, no, no. That's not what Chazal are trying to tell us. Why? Ki eina kavona, he says. He says, that is not the kavona. It cannot possibly mean, shebishas tefirosoi. In other words, he rejects, he says, the notion that the time that he was teaching, hoyedodik v'machshoves al yoynes, then hoyeche machshoves. Right, very common Hasidic teaching. No matter what you do, your mind is way high up, very lofty, very high up. Said Rav Sosa Lanta, no, no, that's not what it means. It's also al pidin. If you're repairing somebody's shoes, somebody gave you a pair of shoes, and you are a hired person, ki ech yifnes datoy ludovaracha. Rav Sosa Lanta said, he says, how is it possible, he says, to engage your mind in something else, bishoa she'oising b'mleches acherim. He says, you have to have the customer in mind. You have to have the mind to be able to do the best job for your customer. He hired you. So what does it mean he had Yehudim? What does it mean that he was Miyachid Yehudim? What does it mean? And the Toichen are Yehudim, so you're Miyachid. You know what the Toichen of those Yehudim? As you saw my liver, Mishachtim. What means Machshavet? You know what his Machshavet means? So tonight we'd be forbidden to do it the other way. Now how could he divert his attention? How can he divert his attention, he says, to other things? When you're engaged in work on somebody else, the world of Musa says that has to be your foremost goal. Do the best. So he says, you know what Miyachid Yehuda means by Chanoich? The tzidkis of Chanoich was that b'chol tfira tfira, that every stitch that he gave, kitiya toiva v'chazoka, he says, he made sure, he says, that every stitch would be good and strong, and that the pair of shoes he said he'd be making would be a good pair. That's what Miyachid Yehudim. Because most people, right, they may be doing a job, but their mind is really on other things. They're not so dedicated to the customer, right, to carry out the achrayas of pi'alocha, to do the best job possible. You have people working in offices, right, they speak on the telephone, at right, the expense of the time of... or people steal paper clips that he puts up there. Yeah. When you're working for someone, said Rav Sosa Lanter, you have to give them your undivided attention to the job that you do to make sure that you can produce the best pair of shoes and the stitching come out good and strong. That would mean he was Miyakad Yehudim. Miyakad Yehudim means that he devoted. With Miyakad, he designated his mind fully to the task at hand to carry out the wishes, right, of those who hired him to the highest level. Do the best job possible because that's what you were hired for. That's what you're getting paid for. You can't give him a second-class job. You have to give him a first-class job. Yechayi hamanolim toivim, as he says. So the Yechayi says, in fact, he says that the pair of shoes should come out good. That the pair of shoes, he says, should come out good. That's the avodah. That is the Yechayi. That was chanoi. Laman yehem and mehem asher yenolim. Should be able to benefit. Those who put on the shoes should be able to have the best benefit. Koko dovet chanoi b'midas koinoi. That is following in the ways of Hashem. Yeah, that way, yeah. Doing the job, doing that mundane job, doing that job, and concentrating on the physical job, that's following the path of Hashem. Following the path of Hashem does not mean just only daven, you know, or just learn. Following the path of Hashem means when you're doing your job, you're doing your regular work, but make sure you do it the best way possible, not to cheat the customer. Not to cheat the customer, that the customer should get really the best job possible. That is following B'derech Hashem. That's because that is what Hashem really charges each and every one of us. Ashiyete v'yehena l'zolosoi, to be able to get pleasure and benefit right, to whoever would wear those pair of shoes. That was it. Just like Hashem, to spread goodness, right, and to benefit others as much as possible. The kocha yichid lo yichudim, this is the way that he designated his mind. Nothing else was... Chanoich had no other ambition when he was working for someone. Zula tarchefet so'echot. Except one thing. Vashiva miyuchedis, his only ambition was to do what Hashem wants him to do. And that is, do the best job possible. Because that's what halacha demands. That's called miyachad yichudim. That's the tzidkis. V'oyra cheres is loy bazeh. So besides that also, there'd be no question that we would not deceive anybody. There's no question about that. He said, "Kenichimam kol shemetra." There's no question, right? That Chanoch would never be involved in any deceiving, any overreaching. He says, "Shegam shigigus oynoa v'tarmus." That's overreaching. He said, or deception. That looked tagiyam. It's not possible. He said, and he would not take anything extra. He says, than he felt that he deserved for the job that he was doing. Okay, so that is one way of looking, going from the earliest of times. This is the way a tzaddik Chanoch. The Torah calls him a tzaddik, and Chazal told us why he's a tzaddik, because when he was working for someone, he made sure that is his fullest commitment and undivided attention to make sure that he's able to produce, and to do that he was hired to do the best way he can do it. What's the other side? Not the other side. Who is the other one? Chofetz Chaim, he says. That's the latest of time. Chanoch is from the earliest of time. Chofetz Chaim. Here's about the Chofetz Chaim, he says. Very fascinating thing. Something you may have heard about, because there's so many things written about the Chofetz Chaim. You may have heard this. But here you have it, Rav Dester writing it. Hamayt HaShen, he says. He said, the other thing he says that I want to show, the second story concerns, he says, Yisapra al Rabbeinu Yisro Meir HaKoyen Zecha Tzadik Lebrocha. But the Chofetz Chaim. Haloi oi dochinu liris es Tzadik HaKodesh HaZeh B'dereinu. He says, we have all merited, he says, to have him in our own generation. It's now. We're not talking about the past. We're talking about someone now in our time. Huloi Chofetz Lehisparnes B'Toyrosoi. Chofetz Chaim did not want to make a living from Torah learning. Chofetz Chaim did not want to make a living from Torah working, and therefore, he goes to work. He opens a business. He opens a store. Chofetz Chaim opened a store. So what did he do? Did not want to benefit from his Torah learning, did not want to benefit from that, make a living from that. So maybe the Chofetz Chaim decided to open a grocery store. That's what it was. It was a grocery store. It goes without saying that the goods he writes that it was of the best quality that came out of the store. Mid Gedusha. Not only that, the measures that he gave when you weighed stuff was always heaped up. The customer always got more. Customer came in and asked for a pound of this, a pound of that. Chofetz Chaim would always make sure it's heaped to make sure the customer gets everything they needed. Mid Gedusha. V'amishkal machriya l'loikeach todir, he says. And he says the scale will always tip in the favor of the customer. Scale always tipped. Guess what? It didn't take long that everybody came to his store. All the other stores now were losing customers. Hey, go over here. You always get more for your money. So he says, could move it, you can understand. So all the customers, he says, would come to the Chofetz Chaim. So Chofetz Chaim said, no, it's not right. It means that I indirectly, are taking away, right? I'm siphoning off customers from the others. The other businesses, the small stores are losing because of me. They're all coming to me. In came Bemayis Farnas with Sharachem. Who do you see them there? His word, he has too many customers. So he says, how are the others going to have Parnosah? So how are the others going to have Parnosah? How are they going to make a living? But Yasso Lechoik, so the Chofetz Chaim decided, what he does? He's going to only have the store open for 2 or 3 hours a day. So the others, stores, will be able to make a living. The other hours. So Vayasla Lechoik, so Chofetz Chaim, right? This is the schedule. He yiftach et chanusa rak l'shosh atayim. You only have a store open for an hour a day by day, an hour or two by day. Ada yarviach eze prutis, he'll just make a couple of prutis for the day. Dai pon asosu l'yoyim b'tzumtzum, but just enough, he says, to be able to, that's what it is, just barely, he says, to make it through the day. To enable the other people, right, also shopkeepers to make a living also. Guess what? Chofetz Chaim saw it doesn't work. Even having the store open only for an hour or two, all the customers waited for that hour or two. So now they couldn't get into the store. They didn't take the advantage of the store being closed going to the other customers. Everybody still came to the Chofetz Chaim. So again, he saw that even keeping it open for an hour or two a day, he still felt he's taking away business from the others. They all made sure, right, to be mitzamtzim themselves to come at the time when the store is open. They managed to come at the brief time. You know what he did? He closed the store completely. He closed up the store altogether. Will not be a grocer if this caused, he felt, injury to others. That's it because of the Chofetz Chaim. But this gives a little bit of a picture of how tzaddikim, givers not takers, that even whatever they take, the idea is to be able to continue giving all the more. So this rabbi said, this is one chelik again of the essay regarding giving or taking, but he continues on further, as we'll see, Be'ez Hashem, he says more about that. But again, just very interesting as we see that the human nature, how it is, and how tzaddikim, of course, have a different approach all into life of what the purpose in life is. Maximum givers and very little taking. And even taking, as he said, was for the purpose of the giving. We take a look a little bit, the time is really running off short here, but let's take a look at the sheet. There's a little bit of time we can have here. And here we see a little bit of another perspective from Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman, matter of fact. Rav Tzvi Bergman is the son of Rav Shach. And he heard from Bala Musar. He says that a storekeeper, by the way, who does business legitimately, of course he's entitled to take money. But the money that he takes, again, doesn't mean that he's a taker. Because why? Because the fact is you're providing a service, they says, to society. You take money because you need to survive to be able to continue providing that service. And there's nothing wrong even to make profit. He said, of course, there's nothing wrong to make profit. As long as the purpose of making the profit is to be able to allow you to be a upstanding person in society and to be able to make even a greater contribution to society. So it comes out, as we take a look over here, that this is the distinction between Ephraim, who bought, right? Ephraim, actually, Avraham Avinu, you notice something very interesting, that when Ephraim came, and first of all he said, he says, don't worry, Avraham Avinu, he says, I'm going to give you everything that I have, whatever you want. Not only that, he charged him, which means the highest denomination of coins. The highest denomination. Let's take a look here a little bit quickly in the Medrash Rabbah here. It's from the Sefer Shara Oira, Parshas Chayesov from Meir Tzvi Bergman. Let's go a little bit quickly here. The Medrash Rabbah, Parshas Chayesov, he says, the Omer Abchiz, the Kol Shkolim Amur in the Torah is Shloim. Shkolim in the Torah is Shloim. Shloim is a smaller denomination in Shkolim. Nevi'im is Litrim. That's a higher. Biksuvim is Kantrin. Kantrin is the highest denomination. The Yudan Omer Chutz Meshikla Yefrin Shoya Kantrin. In the Torah, Shkolim usually does not mean Kantrin. Kantrin is the highest denomination. A shekel can mean like, instead of being a lira, a shekel can be a dollar, a shekel can be a pound, you know? So when Ephraim, when he took Shkolim, wasn't Stam Shkolim. He took the highest denomination in which Shkolim can be. But as the Pasuk in Mishlei, the Pasuk in Mishlei reads as follows. It says, Nival Ahoyin Ishra. Nival Ahoyin Ishra means that there's a person who is over-eager for wealth. There are people who are so overly eager. Nival Ahoyin Ishra. Nival Ahoyin Ishra Ayin. The person who is over-eager for wealth, he has an evil eye. Because whatever he sees, he wants to hoard. He always wants to take for himself. However, that person does not know ki cheser yivoyenu. He does not understand that the more he desires wealth, his wealth will diminish. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not allow him to keep it. A person is into wealth. A person into wealth, he does not understand, does not realize ki cheser yivoyenu. So Chazal say, who is a person that I can point to who is over-eager to amass wealth? The Nival Ahoynish Ra'ayin the Ephraim. Shehichnis Ayin Rabba Mamoynish Otsadi. He just wanted Rav Avinu's money. He said, I'll be able to charge as much as I can. Chazal said that's Ephraim. Ephraim is the Ishra Ayin. La Yoda, and he did not know ki Cheser Yivoy, and he did not know that he's going to lose. He'd be shortchanged. Cheser means Chasarn. How is Ephraim shortchanged? The word Ephraim is written without a Vov. He lost a Vov. Ephraim can be written Mole with a Vov. You'll notice over there it's written without a vav. Shechosru sa'atoy revav. Right? Hadol of Seir. Look at the posik. Vayishma Avrom el Ephraim. Vayishka el Ephraim. Ephron k'siv. You'll see. Chosru vav. It's really without a vav. Look in the Chumash. It's written without a vav. So says here Rameir Tzvi Bergman. Chazal, he says, Igdiru. Chazal, you see, have categorized. Shemishu nival ohoim. Here's the word. Chazal explained. A person's overly eager for wealth aims a rock because he wants wealth. Because Hazal really interpreted, they really analyze human nature. A person who's overly eager for wealth is not just because he wants wealth. It's not just he wants wealth. Ela noisen ein of the memoino shalachem, the ein ra. There's such a thing, you look at a kind of person wants a lot of money, but Hazal would say what's deeply rooted is, as much as he wants a lot of money is because why? Because he sees somebody else has it, and therefore he wants it. It's an Ayin Ra. Niva Lohoin is based upon Ayin Ra. He wants somebody else's. That is really the springboard. That's the springboard of this drive. You see, it's I'd like to have that. It's the Ayin Ra of a person. So you go down to say, look in the bottom, look, Vanera is there, go down further. He says, Afimash Shemati. Look at number two. I heard from Hashem Echad Megdoila Chassidus. He said, I heard from one, doesn't mention which Rebbe he said, but I heard from one of the Gedoila Chassidus, Shoma Al Echad Memukairov, who said to one of his relatives, Shenil Vaimoy, the left over there, her Rebbe was walking with one of his relatives. And he said, Boy, Erolok Achnosa Sorkin. I want to show you Achnosa Sorkin. Let's stop for a moment. So what did he show him? You can imagine, you expect he'll show him a house like Avraham Avinu, right? There's an open door, everybody comes in. He shows him Achnosa Sorkin, he shows him a restaurant that's 5,000 people going in and eating. So the guy, that's Achnosa Sorkin, that's a business! So that business can also be a business and Achnosa Sorkin at the same time. The shadow is always, what's your main purpose in life? Nothing wrong earning money, he says. Is what is the attitude that surrounds the entire behavior? In other words, the Rebbe said, I'll show you someone who has a restaurant feeding people. Yes, he's making money at the same time, but still Achnosas Orchim. It's still Achnosas Orchim. Let's take a look. So the Rebbe said, come, I'll show you someone who's a tremendous Baal Machnas Orchim, he says. A lot of people eat over there. Bai Shemachnisam Orchim. Goy Mol Chesed L'meyus L'alotim. He's a person, Goy Mol Chesed, he says, to thousands of people. You go to the main street, Masada, right? The Masada, they had a restaurant in Meir Shulchan, 100 tables there in the restaurant. Whoever came to eat, he to him, right? The waiters came and he brought him, Oichel B'derach Kovid, Kiminik, Bote, right? Like you find in the Choshva restaurants. So the person comes in and he sits B'derach Kovid, right? And they bring him his food. So the relative said to the tzaddik, that's Achnosas Orchim? What kind of Achnosas Orchim was that? Harani Roya, I see Shikolechot, Acher, Gomer Lech. I see everybody, when he's finished, he goes to pay. Nigashu, the Mitzrah, right, he goes there to the office, he goes there to the desk, and Mishalim, and he pays. Azeon Atzadik, he says, Mahapela, about buying his money to be able to feed the Orchim. He needs money to be able to buy food. So he's getting paid, but he needs money to buy food. So where's he going to buy food from if he does get money? He ties it up that way. He needs the money to be able to buy food to give to the Yorkshire. He says, Mahapela Rebalabai Sorkesa Bishop Likna Sorkesuda Lamokar. He's not going to have money, how's he going to buy food tomorrow? See, he needs to feed the people. So then the relative said, wait a minute. But he's making a profit much more than is needed to buy food for tomorrow. Yes, it's tzaddik. So Omar Mikurev, so the relative said, Ava Balabai's Likeh, Yoysen Mashut Sorkh Ava Mokar. But he's taking more money than necessary merely to buy food to feed the people tomorrow. Why? Look, there's expenses also, not just to buy food. You have to pay for the waiters. He said, Bishawai Sois, and all the expenses. So the relative didn't let up. He says, no, but his profit is much more. He says, than paying the waiters, and for the food, and for the electricity, for the air conditioning, for all that. More than necessary for all that. But he also has to live. He needs money for himself too. So Mamela, he says, he has to live in order to be able to continue living, to be able to provide service further. So it all depends on attitude. You can take money for something, and yet you can sit to be a giver, not a taker. You have to be a giver, not a taker. So that is the opposite that Ephraim was. That's not the direct opposite. Ephraim was clearly a taker. That's why he's choser. That's the idea of being a choser. Being choser means this whole metzias of a person with someone. But someone which is merely, right, is someone really which is someone who wants to take, he says, and is not a giver. Let me just finish with a little small little story here. And we had many, many years ago, there was a famous Magid Yerushalayim. We actually privileged here, this community had it. I don't say more than our fair share, you know, a lot of the Gedolei Yisrael that came throughout the years to visit over here. And we always made a point of giving a platform and always an Adam Choshev come to speak. And sometimes it was a Shabbos morning, sometimes it was a Friday night, sometimes it was a Baal Shalosh Yudis. Shom Shav Dron, everybody remembers. He came from time to time. Simcha Wasserman used to come from time to time. And there was a Magid here. It was a Shabbos Yudalevich, a very famous Magid also in Yerushalayim. And it was also Nifter in the year 1996 was Nifter. The Sfarim now written from a lot of his drushes, there's a lot of tapes and CDs and everything like that. One Friday night he spoke here, standing over here, was after the Suda, people came, and so on. I don't remember what he said then. And so Reb Shabbos Yudlevich was a Choshev Magid. So he related, he said that was a Yid by the name of his name of Reb Lippe, he says, who hit on very hard times. And the point we're trying to show is that sometimes, we're talking about Achnos Sarkin, once you show that how sometimes one sentence can change a person's life. Once you show that sometimes how one sentence, the right sentence you say to someone or somebody hears can truly change a person's life. You have no idea some of the impact of words. Sometimes only one sentence. They put it, so this poverty stricken Rav, he found himself on very hard times. So he travels abroad to raise money for the family, and his first stop, he says, was Italy. So his first stop was Italy, and he goes to Italy, and he docked in one of the cities. I believe it was in Milan. It was on a Friday. He had no idea where he's going. And so as he was walking by, and there was a horse-drawn carriage. A wealthy man was driving by, and he sees this Yid with a beard, something unusual in Italy. It's gone back quite a few years, 80 years or something ago. And he stops and says, Shalom Aleichem, he says to this Yid from Eretz Yisrael, to this poor Rav, says, Shalom Aleichem. And he says to him, he says, where are you from? He says, I'm from Yerushalayim, he says. This Rav saw right away that the person in the carriage was a very wealthy man. See by the way that he was dressed, looking at the coach and looking at the horses, he saw that he was quite a wealthy man. So the person said to him, so you're in luck, he says. He says, come with me, he says, and stay by me. Matter of fact, I'd like to invite you to come stay for Shabbos. So he helps him into the carriage. His name was Mr. Hilvig. He helps him into the carriage, and together they go to the family mansion. And they talk about the different lifestyles that he's living in Italy, and he's from Yerushalayim, you can imagine, also different. As he was there for Shabbos, so he just not could get over the fact to see all the gold and all the silver. He looks at the china closet and he sees, you know, the very, very expensive kalim and everything that's over there. But suddenly he notices, the guest notices something very unusual in the china closet. But he notices something was in the middle shelf. It was a broken glass flask. He noticed, which had sharp points of jagged edges, which they jutted out in a very unstylish way. One can clearly see there was no sculpture of anything. Sometimes you see something, you say, try to figure out what's the chokhmah is. There's no chokhmah there. It was a broken piece of glass, flask, you know, as we say, with jagged edges. He sees it over there, and it's right in the middle there in that china closet, you know, surrounded by all the very silver and gold and very expensive kalim. It clearly stood out like a sore thumb. So he says, if you don't mind my curiosity, he says, he asks the wealthy man, he asks him, he says, what's, it seems out of place in this beautiful cabinet. So what's it doing over there? So he smiles and says, I'll tell you. He says, my children know the story. They heard it many, many times. Whoever comes in asks the same question. So I'll tell you what happened, he says. And he says basically that he was born in Amsterdam. Age 18, he says, and his in Italy, he said that's what his grandparents did, his grandfather. Grandfather was getting older. He was 18 in Amsterdam. So his grandfather said, please come stay with me a little bit to help me out. And he helped in the business. So I went. Finally, he says, didn't take very long. He said, my grandfather passed away. I was very successful in the business. He says, matter of fact, I even enlarged the business. The business grew because of me. He had a lot of siyata shmaya, a lot of atzloch, a lot of luck. He said, I'm staying here. One thing led to another. He said, he just moved away from Yiddishkeit completely. Little by little. Just got into the business world. His parents were not there. He was alone. And he was being Masliach. And he saw and he found himself clearly. He found himself very clearly. The way it started was, he said, very interesting. He said, I was involved in a business deal. I missed mincha. I just started missing in one mincha. No, he says, not such a bad thing. Miss mincha, he says. He says, then soon, he said, I miss shachris. He says, then certainly, he says, one thing just led to another, and then it was this, then it was that, then it was Shabbos, just until entirely mamish, there was no, hardly anything left. He had married, got married, he says, with children and so on and so forth. And says, then he was walking through the streets, and he sees a crowd of children surrounding a boy who was crying bitterly. It's a crowd of children around the boy. They're going to find out why is the boy crying. So the boy says, and explained quite simply, and he says to him, and he said, maybe I can help you. So the boy explained, he says, that his father is very poor, and he saved up a very day by day, he says, precious few pennies, to be able to buy very special oil for Hanukkah. That's before Hanukkah. Then he gave me the money, which he saved up, he says, for Hanukkah. And he told me, the boy says, my father told me that make sure that come right back, don't play with any children because you'll break it. And if you'll break it, he says, all the oil, all the money going to waste. I won't have no money, I won't have the oil. So he says, yeah. So on the way back, he says, all the friends were playing. So he invited him to play with him. A child couldn't resist. So the long he plays with them, and sure enough, the jar of oil, the whole thing just breaks, all the oil's out. He says, the following words he said to him says, he says, what will I tell my father when I get home? He says, what will I tell my father? These are the words. So right away he said, they come to me, go to the store. So they buy even a larger, bigger flask of oil, everything like that. And he says, it hit me. What will I tell my father? And I thought to myself, a person doesn't live forever. When my time comes, he says, right, and I have to give a din b'cheshbon. What will I tell my father in heaven? He says, in Shemayim, Avinu Shebashemayim, what will I tell him? What will I tell him? He said, those innocent words, that boy just gave me again just that jolt. He said, that was the kick, that was the shot in the arm that I needed. And decided right there and then, he says, I'm coming back. He says, go back to the derech of my parents, go back. I picked up the broken pieces of glass that the boy that had broken. I figured, this is I'm going to save for everyone to see, because this is what brought me back to Yiddishkeit. If the little boy would not have broken this flask of a little oil, I still would have been where I am. And that's a reminder for me. This is a reminder for me. One sentence. What will I tell my father? So the Tzadik Ramayel Premishlaner said, when Yehuda goes to Yosef, and Yosef insists, Vayigash Yel of Yehuda, and Yosef, right, wants to insist that they leave Binyamin behind. After all the tzaras, and Yehuda says, Eicha ele elovi v'hanare nenu iti. So simple meaning is, how can I come back to Yaakov Avinu, right, without bringing the boy, without bringing Binyamin? And Rav Purim Mishlana said, Eicha ele elovi, how will I go back to Oviv Shebashamayim v'hanar, and the days of my youth are not with me? I've wasted all the days of my youth. It's the same idea. Eicha ele elovi. The power of words, one word, he had the Swiss to find his way back.